Då tar jag och säger välkomna till avsnitt nummer 89 av Sockerberoende, Sveriges kanske enda podcast om nordamerikansk fotboll. Jag heter Johan Dykhoff och i det här avsnittet ska vi få lära oss mer om fotbollen på Guam, alltså det lilla öriket och amerikanska autonoma territoriet i Stilla havet. Jag har i det här avsnittet intervjuat Kyle Halehale, som är landslagsman för Guam och collegefotbollsspelare på Central Connecticut State University. Kyle Halehale föddes 3 juni 2002 och kommer från staden Tamuning på Guam. Kyle berättar mer om sin fotbollsbakgrund i själva intervjun, men i korthet kan jag här säga att Kyle under sin ungdom spelade i högsta ligan på Guam och representerade diverse U-landslag. Han A-landslagsdebuterade 2018 vid 16 års ålder och han har idag gjort 10 A-landskamper. Kyle flyttade hösten 2020 till USA för studier och collegefotbollsspel på Central Connecticut State University, där han nu har spelat 4 säsonger. Inför vad som kommer att bli Kyles femte och sista säsong som collegefotbollsspelare kommer han dock att flytta till Mercyhurst University i Erie, Pennsylvania. Sommaren 2021 spelade Kyle för Hartford City FC i NPSL och den kommande sommaren har han för avsikt att spela i USL League 2 för Staten Island Monarchs. Kyle har tidigare i karriären huvudsakligen spelat innermittfältare men berättar i intervjun att han på sistone främst har spelat mittback. Guam är som sagt ett så kallat amerikanskt autonomt territorium beläget i Stilla havet. Guam ligger cirka 2 500 km söder om Japan och är till ytan aningen mindre än halva Öland. Dess befolkning uppgår till knappt 170 000 invånare. Guam tillhör den asiatiska fotbollskonfederationen AFC och deras herrlandslag är för tillfället rankade på 205 plats i världen av 210 landslag. 2015 nådde de sin bästa placering någonsin på världsrankingen, nämligen 146 plats. Under den här relativt framgångsrika perioden rekryterades ett flertal spelare som var födda och uppvuxna i USA, men som tack vare guamesiskt påbrå kunde representera Guams landslag. Några av spelarna som drog på sig Guams landslagströja under de här åren var MLS- och USL-bekantingar som Ryan Guy, AJ De La Garza, Brandon McDonald, Shane Malcolm, bröderna Sean och Travis Nicklaw och målvakten Dallas J. I den här intervjun pratar vi bland annat om Kyles uppväxt på Guam och fotbollens roll i hans liv som ung, flytten till USA och vad den har betytt för hans utveckling som fotbollsspelare, Guams landslag och dess både framgångar och motgångar samt vad Kyle har för förhoppningar med sin fotboll framöver. So to start off, can you just talk a bit about your like your childhood and what role sports and soccer in particular played in your life as a kid?
So I started playing football like at when I was like 5 years old, and my uncle really helped me like find the love of the sport, and I really played with him a lot. And I was in the youth system on Guam. I played for a local club team called Wings FC. And I played there till I was like 17. Mm-hmm. So I was there for most of my youth career. And Wings actually had a lot of Japanese roots. So there was a lot of coaches from Japan that would coach under the club. And I was there for most of my youth career. And I also was a part of the youth national team, under 13s all the way to the under 21s. But yeah, like basically sums up my youth career. When I was like 14 or so, I tried to move to the United States. I did a few trials in MLS academies. Mm-hmm. I got invited to try out for Columbus Crew. Mm-hmm. FC Dallas, and I did an open trial at San Jose Earthquakes, which I actually did make, but unfortunately, due to how expensive it is to live in California and specifically Silicon Valley, my parents weren't trying to move, and they just didn't want me to. First of all, I couldn't afford living there on my own, and second of all, they didn't want me to move with all the circumstances and everything that was going on. So that's I guess, a quick summary about my youth career.
I see. I would guess that most Swedish listeners don't know a whole lot about soccer in Guam. Like, how would you describe the soccer culture and the popularity of soccer in Guam?
Football right now, so it was growing a lot, especially how we performed in the, what is it, 2018 World Cup qualifiers. Guam did very well. We got a lot of good results, winning against India with a population of 160,000 to what, 2 point something billion. We beat Turkmenistan at home, and we tied against Oman, who beat Japan the year before. So like three huge results on the island, which like really grew the sport a lot again. But I would say in general right now, like, the Guam football culture is still small compared to the whole world. We just don't have the same resources as a lot of the world and the same football like knowledge, I'd say. It's nothing comparable to like Europe or even North America, if I'm going to be completely honest. And as a kid growing up on Guam, if you really wanted to play at the next level, the only way to do that is to really, at a certain point, you have to expose yourself to a higher level. And like the only way to do that is to just leave Guam. And if I'm going to be completely honest, like, it's very difficult to thrive being born and raised on Guam. So that's a little summary of it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are like the traditional American sports the most popular in Guam if you compare to football?
I'd say like football is equally the same as American football and basketball, but right now on Guam, basketball is making a huge push to grow its sport. So they're really like reaching out to the youth, like fitting in. You know how basketball is very like hip hop culture, and the youth could gravitate towards that really easily. So basketball is making a huge push, and the Guam basketball team actually had some big results in their qualifiers too. So basketball is a growing sport right now, and honestly, I think football is kind of staying stagnant, which is unfortunate to see as I've been a part of it for all my life.
What is it like overall? Is everyday life in Guam like heavily influenced by American culture, would you say?
Yes, so Guam is actually a US territory,
Yeah, right.
so it's very heavily influenced by Western and Southeast Asian culture and like East Asian culture, I'd say. So it's actually a really diverse country. So you'll get like people from all parts of the world. You get people from like Philippines, Japan, Korea to the US. So people from like Europe who like are sick of the cold weather. So like there's a small growing Russian population too. There's just people from all over, from Hawaii, from like South America, especially because Guam was first, what do you call it, discovered by Spain. There's a lot of like Latin influences too, so it's very, very diverse.
Yeah, I had in like I don't know 5 6 years ago, I had on a previous podcast that I did, I had Shane Malcolm, the Guam national team player, on, and I believe he was he
Jamaican.
born in Jamaica, I think. Yeah, but
I've
he
played with Shane multiple times.
oh right, yeah, super nice guy.
Yeah, super cool guy.
Before moving to the United States, did you play in like the Premier Division of Guam?
Yeah, so Guam, we do not have a professional league just
Right.
because of population and funding and sponsorship. It's very difficult to create one. So the highest level is the Budweiser Premier League, and I was a part of that since I was like 13. So that's the only good thing I'd say about Being on Guam is like being from Guam is like as a kid, like I've always played against men. So like you're exposed to the physicality levels like pretty early. And I think that's kind of helped me in the college game because I don't think it's that physical in my opinion. I think it's just compared like just the same thing to me. But yeah, I've played in the Premiership division here on Guam.
Yeah. And I guess that's, is that even semi-professional or is it even amateur?
I'd say it's amateur football, to be
Yeah.
honest, which like it's no one can make a career. Like, no one can devote their everyday life to train and play consistently. So a lot of people, this is just what their hobbies are. Like, after they work Monday to Friday, like on Sunday they have a game. But now the culture is starting to change. A lot of teams are trying to implement mandatory team sessions, which is nice to see. And now that the Premiership, I think the Federation, Football Federation, is trying to make sure that each team has, I think, a C license for coaching. So now there's a little more structure, and I think we're heading towards the right direction in that aspect.
So which club or clubs did you play for in the Premier Division?
So I first started off at Strikers FC under Keith Dixon, and that's where I was. Like I got a lot of minutes there, and I got to play with a lot of older players, and it was a great experience. But and then our first team head coach, which was also our under 19s head coach, he made his own club, and we kind of had our under 19 national team play in that club all together, so we could just get game experience, because not like other national teams and other teams, we don't get to play against competition in every international break or like friendly matches. So instead of that, what we did is we built a under 19s national team, and we just put that team in the Premiership division so we could just play week in, week out together. So for like about 2.5 years or so, I was playing with them, and then I went to college. So
Right. I believe Singapore have done something similar. I think they're like U21 or U23 national team actually plays in the local league. Kind of similar way of doing things then.
think Singapore and I think even the Philippines is doing that too.
Ah, okay. Interesting. So, moving on to your college career, like how did you get the opportunity to study and play college soccer in the United States?
So my goal is always to try to play Division One college soccer and then eventually play professionally. So as I was talking to a lot of senior players on the men's national team who've played Division One, some of them even winning like national champions in the whole country. So I was asking them like what their process was like and how did they get recruited and all that, because it's very different from coming from Guam, just because like a coach cannot just see me in the weekend and see how I play. Like it's a completely different recruitment process compared to people in the US or people in Europe. And what I was doing was, first of all, I was asking them to be my resource, or for them to be my resources. So I'd ask them to reach out to anyone they'd know. And honestly, to be completely honest, I was not planning to go to the East Coast at all. I wanted to stay on the West Coast where it was a little warmer and closer to home. But I had a teammate that played at UConn when they were national championships. They were like really good at the time, and he just told me to reach out around the area. So I started to email schools down the East Coast, and David Kelly, the head coach of CCSU right now, he just looked at my email. Then we talked a lot, exchanged a lot of film, and just worked out financially, to be honest, like the most. And I also really wanted to get a lot of minutes my first year instead of going to like a top school and maybe riding the bench or like getting a few minutes for the my first year. I wanted to like really play. So it ended up working out athletically and financially. So I ended up coming here at Central Connecticut State University.
Was it a difficult decision to actually like take the step and accept the offer and thereby deciding to move to the US?
So moving to the US wasn't really like a difficult decision. Obviously, like I'm leaving my family, my mom, my dad, my two siblings behind, but I've been kind of used to that because every summer, what I wanted to do, my goal was to leave Guam to try to play in the US in a academy system. So I've been kind of used to leaving them like over the summers, and since I was like second grade to I'd say like eighth grade, I used to like live in Japan for 2 months because I have family in Japan, and there I would like attend school because the school like calendar year is completely different, so they had school in the summer while we didn't. So I'd attend school and I played for like a club there. So I was always away from family like for big portions of my life. So it wasn't a difficult decision. It was just like more of like oh, it's finally happening kind of thing. So
I see. Do you speak like fluent Japanese?
yes, so my mom's side is all from Japan. So my mom taught me and my siblings to speak Japanese, and I'd say I speak it fairly well.
Ah, impressive. Is it common for young people from Guam to move to the US to study, not only to play soccer or other sports, but for like academics in general?
Yeah, I'd say so academically, like a lot of people on Guam, they either I'd say 50% of them try to leave the island to go to university in the United States for two reasons. One, just because like the academics are much better there, like better schools, whatever, better resources, all that. And two, just to experience like new things because Guam is very small, like you live the same day-to-day life, and a lot of people just want to experience something new. I'd say 25% of them stay on Guam just because it's financially very difficult to leave because you're paying full tuition anywhere you go, out-of-state tuition, and you don't have any fam like you might not have any family, so it's very financially heavy on you. And the other 25% I'd say join the military just for like other circumstances, And I say athletically, before it wasn't as common, just because that route wasn't really, it's a very difficult route, to just leave your home, there's no backup plan, whatever. But now, I'd say since I've tried to do it, I see a lot of kids around my brother's age, maybe like 06, 17, 16, like a lot of kids, they're starting to move to the US and join academy systems, which is nice to see, and hopefully like grow their football career from that.
Yeah, I see. I thought that as well because when I saw your name on the CCSU soccer roster, I thought to myself, I haven't seen too many players from Guam in the college game. So that seems to be maybe that was a correct assessment by me then perhaps.
Yeah.
And you moved to CCSU in the summer of 2020, is that correct?
Yeah, the some fall of 2020.
Fall of 2020, yeah. So that was when the pandemic was still like red hot, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was a very weird period, I won't lie. Training, we're training in pods, groups of four, training with masks. The school had a ton of protocols. It was very difficult, and at the time, normal, because now like this is like what 6 months into like wearing masks, all that, but like looking back at it was very, very difficult.
I can imagine. And you last year was it your fourth season?
It was my third season technically, so I have one more year.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how would you like summarize these past season at CCSU soccer wise?
For me, it was a little like some ups and downs, I'd say. So it was, I was able to get a goal and like a few assists, which was nice. And I was also called up to the national team. So I kind of left in the middle of my season, missed a few games to go represent my country, which was really cool. Great experience playing against Singapore. But it was a little disappointing not making the playoffs. I think our team had We had the squad and we had the ability to definitely make the playoffs, and I think we underachieved there a little bit, but It's part of football, you know, like some things just don't go your way, but I think it was a great experience for me overall this season, being able to represent my country and play a lot of minutes again and try to fight for that playoff spot.
Yeah. And is it correct that you're actually switching to Mercyhurst University for next?
Yes.
Yeah, right. How do you arrive at that decision?
I thought maybe it was a point in time for my football career to kind of change things up and put myself in a new environment, a little more challenging environment, and I have new goals for the next coming season, and I hope to just achieve them at Mercyhurst. And me and the new head coach, we've have a lot of the same common goals, so hopefully, we could build a good team and we could get some results.
Right. And I saw that you actually had a Swedish teammate your past season at CCSU, Benjamin Björkman. How did he do?
He did he's adjusting now really well, but I think for any international student or any international player, the first few months are a little bit difficult just from just not even football wise, just the climate. I know he's like in the fall he struggled with the climate. Like it was 100 degrees outside. He's never experienced this heat. It's preseason. You're training twice a day. It's he struggled a lot with the climate, but just like without football, like just climate, the food, being away from your family, not knowing a single person. So I know how difficult it is because I've experienced the exact same things. But after a few months, I think he settled in really well. Like I think we've really like we all became good friends with him, and now I think he's thriving. And I think next upcoming few years, he's going to be an important part of CCSU if he chooses to stay.
You played at least one season in the NPSL. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Was it like one or two seasons, or how many?
It was one season. The next year, I had to go home, unfortunately, due to some stuff. But yeah, I think was it 2021?
Yeah, right. With Hartford, is that correct?
Harper City. Yep.
Yeah. What was that experience like for you?
It was good. It was actually surprisingly like our team was a good team. We had a lot of players from all over the East region, and we ended up winning the conference, and we did it fairly well, and we got invited to the US Open Cup next year. So it was a really good experience being able to play those games. This summer I'm planning to play USL2 with Staten Island Monarchs, so hopefully
Oh.
that'll be a good experience for me too.
Right.
Looking forward to that.
Right. Like, judging from your experiences, would you say that it's a good would you advise other people who are aspiring to play pro to actually take the chance and play in these summer leagues?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it unless you're injured. You just get to play train with better players, like higher level players. You get to experience new teams and new environments. I just think it would only add to your game, and unless you obviously like you don't want to get burnt out,
Right.
but at the same time, like a lot of coaches are flexible with your summer schedule. And I think it's just a good way to stay sharp. And I've seen a lot of players level up and change during the summer, thriving in these new environments. So I don't see what's wrong with it. And then also if you play well, it's just more opportunity to get seen from other coaches. So I think it's a good environment and a good system that the US has in place, despite having a weird college season, the schedule.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to your national team career, you made your full national team debut back in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, when you were only like 16 years old. How do you recall that game, your full national team debut?
I was nervous, super nervous, I'm not gonna lie. Obviously I was 16 years old. Week before I was just in class. I was extremely nervous, but a lot of the veteran players on the team put a lot of trust in me, and they're really supportive throughout like my first camps and like my first training sessions and my games. And They're really trying to give me a lot of confidence. And, you know, luckily we're winning, I think, 3-0 at the time. So obviously there's a little more cushion for me to play, less pressure, but it was a really good experience. I remember it being freezing cold. We were in Mongolia. It was freezing cold, and I've never experienced weather below 70 degrees at the time. So yeah, it was sick. It was just like playing football again. And you know, once you step on the pitch, it's nothing different.
And you play the Northern Mariana Islands, is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
And you played, I think it's 10 games so far for the full national team. Can you name some of the like most memorable moments with national team for you?
I'll name two. Actually, no, like I'd say every tournament there's always been a big moment for me. Like just recently in the last World Cup qualifiers, like playing in Singapore, in front of like what was it, 14,000 people in the national stadium. And it was the first time for me playing on natural grass at that level. It was honestly super sick. Like it was just like, you know, like what a dream, like what every kid's dream is, like playing in a huge stadium with like 15,000 people and like, well, just hearing your national anthem like play, it's just a lot of pride and honor. And I was really lucky and fortunate to be able to play 90 minutes, first of all, that whole game, and like just be a part of the whole thing. And another one would probably be like when we won against Bhutan. Even though I didn't get step on the field that match, just being a part of the team and like, you know, being down 1-0 aggregate away and then coming in home to win 5-0 to advance to the next round of the World Cup qualifiers. It was a huge result for not only the island but for the sport, honestly, for Guam. So just being a part of that was really amazing.
Right, I can imagine. Do you feel like coming from a small place like Guam and that hasn't obviously had much success in football, like you are, do you feel like a sense of like responsibility to help like improve the state of soccer in Guam and basically take Guamanian football forward?
Yeah, I honestly think so. I might get stick for this, but I don't know if you've seen like Leon Bailey's recent podcast with talking about the Jamaican Football Association.
I haven't, but please tell
Well,
me
yeah,
about it.
if you have time, you should take a look at it. But I think I have the same responsibility to like, you know, kind of call out and like kind of say some stuff about the FA at the moment. But I just think like sometimes the FA isn't thinking about the correct things that they should be to grow the sport. And you know, I think it's not only like the current players but the youth's responsibility to kind of push Guam football's vision to try. Even though we're like a population of 160,000, there's a ton of potential, and if we could do things the right way, obviously there's still a lot of steps in the process and a lot of things that we have to do, but I think we could compete in Asia, maybe not with the top dogs obviously yet, with Japan, Australia, Korea, like Iran, all these countries, but at least with the next level teams such as like Chinese Taipei, like Indonesia, or Indonesia's growing right now at a rapid pace, but like Vietnam, like all these other small teams, like I don't see what stops Guam from achieving these levels when we get good funding from FIFA. And you know, there's ways around it, and I think, you know, it's part of my responsibility to kind of keep the FA and everyone accountable despite being only 21.
Yeah, I see. Are there any full-time professionals in the national team of Guam today?
Yeah, there were a lot before, but you know, I think our national team right now is, every team has this, but we're in a transitional period where older players are retiring and newer players are coming up. But we have a few. So Takumi Ito, he plays in Laos right now. I forgot the team name. I think it's like Ezra FC, but he's playing on in the Premier Division there, first division. Leon Morimoto just signed a contract with Fuego FC. It's like a USL 1 team in the US, down in California. And I don't know if Travis Nicklaus still playing with Chattanooga, but he was signed with them for like a year. So I think at the moment those are the three only players that are playing. So
Okay.
it's unfortunate to see, but it's just what it is right now, you know.
Yeah. Is Jason Cunliffe still playing?
Yes, he is, he
Yes.
is. He's still playing on back home on Guam, and I actually saw him last month, and we all play with each other. Well, we play together like once every time I go back home. But yeah, at the age of what, 40 something, 41 maybe, he's still playing footy.
So what has he meant for the national team and like soccer in Guam in general all these years?
He's honestly, he embodies Guam. Like, he
Hmm.
is Guam. He's been a huge influence to me personally, but to the whole island. You know, he's like the captain. He's like, you know what I mean? He's the skipper. He's like, you know, embodies Guam. He's super passionate, and he cares about the island. He knows what it's like, the daily struggles of being from Guam. He understands how frustrating it is to work with the FA. He understands like all the struggles that anyone on Guam understands. And not only that, he produces in the biggest stage for the smallest island, like when it matters most, like against Singapore. We needed an away goal, as we're down 2-0, and he scored a free kick to make it 2-1, you know, like just having that, like planting that seed to make it possible for us to advance to the next round. I don't know if you've seen his like goal to game ratio for Guam.
Yeah, I think he averages like one goal every 2 or 3 games or something.
Which is insane for like for Guam, you know, like which is ridiculous. And it's something like I strive to be at the international level, and I want to be able to produce like that to make my country proud. And I think he's always doing that day in, day out, and he holds himself at a high standard, which really I look up to a lot.
You spoke a bit about the teams that you've played against with the national team, which is, in your opinion, the best team you've ever played against with the Guam national team.
Or the first team?
Or it could be youth national teams as well. Just in which is the best team you've ever been up against?
The best team I've ever played against in the first team would be Syria, I think. Syria, or yeah, Syria, definitely Syria. I wasn't able to get play against China. I actually missed that game due to like some COVID stuff. I was stuck in Dubai, but Syria was probably the best team I've ever played against. Just their like attacking mindset football and like the pace they had going forward. They're really sharp. Youth wise, definitely Japan, you know, Japan, how they play footy. It's very like Spanish like, a lot of super technical players, sharp on the ball, fast, ruthless. Like, oh man, I just don't want to even think about that.
So, what sort of mindset do you guys have, like as a team, going up against an opponent that is, at least on paper, far superior?
No, we're always underdogs. So I guess for everyone, it's kind of just proving what your worth is. And also it's a huge opportunity for everyone to get seen by scouts or coaches. So everyone just comes in the underdog mindset, trying to prove everyone wrong, and also just making our island proud, just giving a performance that we could be proud of, and getting a result, honestly. Like imagine, we all always say, like, imagine the feeling of getting a result against one of these countries. You know, it's football, you know, anything could happen. Could get a early goal, a one goal, and then just defend for not 80 minutes or whatever, 90 minutes, and you could get a result. Countries that you've seen countries do that, so.
Have you ever had the has it ever been the other way around that you've actually felt that you before a game that you were actually the better team, that you're actually the favorites to win? Have you ever had that experience with national team?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, like I would say maybe it's a realization that happens in the middle of a game. You know, like 10, 15 minutes in, you're like, oh, they're not what we expected them to be. We could dominate the ball. And sometimes it is a surprising feeling, but at the same time, like we're all professionals. We should know how to handle a game when when you're the ones dominating, and it's fun because you get to impose your style of play, and it's just, we don't get to do it often, but when we do, it's very exciting. And it's kind of like, let's see some individual brilliance now.
So Guam are ranked 205th in the world today, if I'm not mistaken. And you spoke a bit about like the struggle. So maybe the FA hasn't made all the correct decisions in the past. But like, how confident do you feel going forward that you guys can might be able to perform and possibly climb the world rankings in the future?
I think it's a very exciting time for Guam football, at least player wise. We have a really young squad now, and I think, if as long as all these players are hungry and they're ready for the opportunity when it presents itself, I think it'd be a good time to be watching Guam football. I think there might be some big results, and really looking forward to it, especially because I could contribute to it a lot now that I'm a little bit older with more experience. I'd like to see Guam football go to the right direction and bring our rankings back up to our highest it's ever been, at like 146, I think, something around that, when we beat India, Turkmenistan, and Oman. And I'd like to, perform at home and get the crowd going and get that feeling that I saw when I was a kid watching them.
What is being done on like the grassroots level to improve the state of soccer in Guam?
I know the FA is organizing a lot more events, and they're trying to make every club, like every coach, have to have a coaching license.
Oh,
Before it
right,
used to
yeah.
be like before it used to be like parents could coach or whatever, it's really like mix and match. But now they're trying to focus on football education, which is a huge thing, I'd say, in developing countries. Just the football education isn't there. And I think just giving kids more opportunity, like, to play outside of Guam. We're having more tournaments outside of Guam that our youth national teams are being invited to, which is very nice. But I think if we could also push that objective more to bring teams more outside of Guam, it'd be huge, just to expose kids to what the reality is, the level is like outside of our island.
Right. I believe when I like read up on Guam soccer some years ago, I read that the training facilities are actually surprisingly good, and that is thanks to like this FIFA is called a goal program. So you actually have a really nice stadium and training facilities and so on. Is that correct?
Yes, we have two very nice turf fields. One actually just got renovated, I think, a few months ago. So, that field is brand new, like state of the art, honestly. And we just built, I think, a few years ago, like a gym at the training facility. So youth national team and first team players have access to that gym, and we have a great strength and conditioning head coach named Pavel. And he honestly does a great job working with athletes, and I stay in touch with him till this day. And he's really world class, I think. But besides those two fields, which are kind of hard to access if you're not part of the national team program or playing, it's kind of tough because we don't really have grass pitches on Guam. That we do have grass pitches, but they're like Sunday league grass pitches. There are holes everywhere. There's rocks everywhere. It's not well maintained. You know how expensive it is to maintain a grass pitch, like, and just the weather is really uncooperative. It rains, like flash rains, then like gets super hot, then rains a lot. It just ruins the grass. But besides that, like, those two pitches are really good, but we literally do everything on them. We do Sunday league games on them. We do youth league games on them. We do national team training on them. We do World Cup qualifying matches on them. So it's a really nice field, but on it, to be honest, like, we need more of those.
Yeah, okay, I see. Focusing a bit more about on you as a player again, for those who haven't seen you play, which is your preferred position and what are, in your opinion, your best qualities as a soccer player?
So I started off in the center of the park, playing like center midfield or like CDM. I've slowly like transitioned into a center back now, and I think It really fits now just because how the game is evolving a little bit, how you really need ball playing center backs that are good out the back, that are comfortable with their feet. And I think that's one of my pros is just like my distribution and how I read the game and my vision. And I think I'm really good at like breaking the first and second line with a pass. And hopefully that will help me translate to the next level. But yeah, I love my passion is still in the midfield just because you could go up and down, score goals. You're really like into the game, but center back has really grown to me, and it's kind of fun. It's a whole different perspective how you look at the game, and I think you use your brain a lot more, which is kind of interesting to me. It's a lot of cat and mouse games, which has been really interesting to learn, to be honest.
To what extent do you feel like you have like developed and become like a different kind of player during your time in the US? Well, you mentioned that you changed positions, but is there anything else that comes to mind when you think about your development as a player during your years in the United States?
Definitely like my speed of thought has improved a lot, being able to play week in and week out with a lot of high level players. And technically too, like obviously you have to add a lot more in your game as you're growing from the youth level to the men's division. And I think I've added a lot of new tools into my game as a player, and definitely just like my IQ, like just thinking quicker and like your speed of thought. I think that's the difference between amateur to semi-pro to semi-pro to professional. It's just your speed of thought, and obviously you want to play simple, but playing simple is the most difficult. So just like speed of thought and your IQ, I think they've improved a lot, but I think there's still a lot long ways to go.
Yeah. Okay. You're not the tallest player. Have you? What is it like being up against like 6 foot 5 college strikers? Is that difficult?
Obviously like it's difficult, but I'm fairly good in the air, I'd say. But yeah, you're right. I'm not 6 foot 5, 6 foot 4, big center back, but I think there's a lot of different ways to manipulate. I think if you know the little tricks, like especially if you're in the back line, you're a center back, you have all the control with the offside lines. So like obviously there's strikers that are rapid, but if you just manipulate the line really well, then you could catch them offside a lot of times, out of position. And I think it's a lot of little details that I've come to learn playing the position, that you learn how to manage bigger players and how to sneak around them, intercept the ball, make him feel uncomfortable. And I think that's one of my strengths. Like, just even though I'm not obviously like 6 foot 4, I think I match up really well against any striker.
You mentioned that your dream is to play professionally in the future. If you look ahead, maybe like 2 or 3 years, where do you hope to be when it comes to soccer?
Man, that's a huge question that I've been asking myself too over the last year. Honestly, like the dream is always to play in Europe, the highest level you can. That being said, I know how difficult it is to get a visa, how you have to get a good agent too. There's a lot of other components other than your football ability that has to do with that. But I'm also I wouldn't be, I'd love to get a few years in Europe, move to the US. But also I wouldn't be afraid to like play in Asia again. I think the level's growing in Asia, and I think there's a lot of good opportunities there too. So I'm kind of open to play anywhere, but first I want to kind of get a maybe like a year or two in Europe, play at like a little like maybe like Sweden's for second or first division, like get a few years under my belt in Europe, and then try to see elsewhere.
We haven't had any Guamanian players in Sweden that I can think of, so let's hope you'll be the first then.
Maybe, you never know.
Sådär ja, då tar vi och tackar Kyle Hallehale för att han tog sig tid att ställa upp på den här intervjun. Och vi önskar honom och Guams landslag stort lycka till framöver. En liten rättelse är att vi faktiskt har haft en guamesisk spelare i Sverige. Det handlar om den tidigare nämnde Brandon McDonald som 2014 gjorde en kort sejour i Ljungskile. Detta var dock innan han hade representerat Guams landslag och han betraktades då fortfarande som amerikan. Men, rätt ska vara rätt. Tack så mycket för att ni har lyssnat idag. Det finns en risk att det blir lite skralt med avsnitt framöver för jag ska relativt snart flytta. Så då är det mycket att stå i med det. Men förhoppningsvis ska jag ändå kunna klämma in några avsnitt nu kommande veckor. Tack för idag. Ta hand om er. Glad påsk. Tja, tja.